This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Oh, baby, welcome in with you until 1 o'clock today. It is the Gas House Gang. It is time to talk. Well, man, was it a lot of sports happening this weekend. A big weekend in sports for many of our local teams. An unfortunate weekend for some. And now we are also getting ready for opening day because it is baseball's opening week. Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ronji on the Gas House Gang today. In fact, we're going to talk baseball at 12:15. Greg Amsinger makes his first appearance on the show. It's going to be a weekly appearance with MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, St. Louis native, went to Lindenwood University. And Lindenwood is, in fact, sponsoring the segment that we're going to talk to Greg every week. We will have a bit of a postmortem with Bob Ramsey, play-by-play voice of the Billikens. He will join us at 12:30. And Amy Marks scores at 12:45. So Brendan and I have very little time to actually talk to each other. So here we are today, Brendan. And before we get to all the baseball and the hockey, Billikens, I want to start there just because they had such a terrific season. And what a win over Georgia that I know everybody talked about last week. But that's the reason right there that a lot of these mid-major programs like the Billikens don't get an opportunity to play the high major teams, you know, teams in the SEC and ACC. That's why they don't do it, because those teams don't want to give the Billikens a game because they might get folded up on any given night, like what happened on Thursday night. But then again, you go play Michigan over the weekend and sort of the opposite thing happens, but still a terrific run altogether.
Terrific run, and I mean, as far as Georgia goes, they're supposed to be SEC. I mean, the Billikens, SLU played the best game of the first round, I think, of anybody in the entire tournament. The way that they took it to Georgia in one of those mid-major versus a power conference matchup that you talk about, Chris, SLU really showed well for themselves. I think it's unfortunate, and this was discussed a little bit last night, Tommy Lloyd of Arizona, after they defeated Utah State, some of those mid-major teams that have great seasons, like a St. Louis or like a Utah State, maybe don't get the most equitable seeding in the tournament. So they're an 8 or a 9 and have to face off against one of the best teams in the country in round two because they're underseeded by a couple of lines. If they're a 6 or a 7, which is maybe more to the level that they earned, they might have a better chance in the second round. But St. Louis certainly showed out well, and it was a lot of fun to see them really as one of the stars of the opening round of the tournament with that win over Georgia.
Yeah, and the Billikens, look, you can't have the final few weeks they had in the regular season and expect to have kept. Like, because I believe that Lunardi and some of the bracketology projections had them at about a 7 or a 6. I want to say at one point they might have been a 6.
Yeah.
And you can't lose some of the games they did or get blown out in the final game of the season and expect to get out of that 8-9. And I said, oh, gosh, it was I think it was about 2 weeks ago. They were projected to be a 10. And I thought, you know what? I'd rather have that. Give me the 10 seed because I just don't. You have a real opportunity to beat the 7, whoever that is. But going up against the number 1 and in this case, probably the best team in the country, in Michigan, that's not what you want in the second round.
No, it's not. I filled out my bracket with Michigan cutting down the nets as much as I wanted SLU to make that upset happen. I just think Michigan's such a good team. And you're right. We can kind of cry and say, well, mid-majors aren't really getting a fair shake. SLU did have that opportunity to finish stronger and probably position themselves a little more favorably. Didn't happen, but they can really be proud of the way that they sure handled that opening game and took it to Michigan for as long as they could hang in that game on Sunday.
What stinks about it is teams like SLU have to be nearly perfect. If you're in the Big Ten, you can afford to have a slip up, several of them actually, and you'll be okay. But teams like this one, like Utah State, Indiana State, a few years, you can't afford any slip ups whatsoever, and that's the life of a mid-major. Meanwhile, and we'll talk about Illinois here in a second, but Mizzou, that's a team that you follow very closely,
yeah,
and they just, not good for them on Friday.
No, it wasn't. I was in the building. I had to break it to my 3-year-old was with me, and he said, "Dad, is it over?" And I said, "Yeah," and he realized that meant they probably didn't win. You know, they had some moments in that game where, despite playing pretty ugly, they made it close. They even took a second half lead, but I feel like ran out of steam and just didn't execute some of the simple things. A lot of missed layups, and man, did they get dominated on the glass with Miami out rebounding the Tigers like 42-29, something in that range. So a couple of those fundamental elements of the sport, Chris, that they fell short in, and the final score reflected that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and oh gosh, who was it? Now it's escaping me, but we talked about it on the previous show that the Miami player who went up to the concourse, did you see
Renew
this?
Renew.
He went up to the concourse after his game against Purdue when Purdue won that one, and he went up in his uniform, his full uniform, and he went and got food at one of the concession stands.
The Enterprise Center concessions, man, I frequented those on Friday night. We got some pretzels, we got a burger. There's a lot of good stuff there, so I can't hardly blame the guy.
Last thing, Fighting Illini. We got a spring training report to get to here in a moment with Tom Ackerman, but the Fighting Illini move on, and I think they are underseeded. I think they're better than a 3. They'll have Houston now in the Sweet 16.
They've got a really dangerous Houston team, and it's happening down in that area of the country, so a little bit of a geographic disadvantage for the Illini, but I put them in my Final Four for my bracket. I think Illinois could actually have a decent chance to advance out of that game, and if they do, they'll face another Big Ten team because it's Iowa and Nebraska on the other side of that region.
It's another Sweet 16 appearance for the Fighting Illini. So college basketball is fun. It's in a great time of the year. We're going to talk to Bob Ramsey, who is the play-by-play voice of the Billikens. He'll be with us at 12:30. And as I mentioned, we want to check in with Tom one more time from Florida as the Cardinals wrap up spring training.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report, sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof. We always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Guys, final day of coverage down here. The Cardinals left this morning and headed to Springfield, Missouri, where they will take on the Cardinals tonight. Their double-A team, the Springfield Cardinals, will have the game for you at 6:05. Dustin May is going to start the ball game. Michael McGreevy yesterday and Jordan Walker with a home run. McGreevy went 5 innings. He looked really good, gave up just 1 run and struck out 5. Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol in his office after the game. I asked him to look back at spring training. And after all of the workouts, all of the training, all of the contests, how he felt about the club going into Thursday.
I feel good about the way we're going to compete every night. They've been clear on the style of play that we're looking to have this year, all year, and not giving in to anything. So I'm really confident in that.
And guys, McGreevy and Walker would be examples of that. McGreevy's 25 years old. Walker is only 23. This is a young team playing together, says Marmol.
I think that's why there's a lot of enthusiasm, because they know that they're going to be together for a while, and this is the group that they need to learn how to win with. So a lot of questions early in camp were around leadership, as far as like who's that leader. And I don't think you have to have a guy. I think each person stepping into that next phase of leadership for them is important, but that room has done a nice job of speaking into that and then talking through how they're going to hold each other accountable to the style of play. So that's the one thing I can guarantee, is there'll be a style of play that I think is exciting to watch.
The roster has still not been finalized. Marmol wants to have conversations with all players before making it official. I'm Tom Ackerman in Florida. Let's send it back to the Gashouse gang.
All right. So, yes, there is a game that happens today, exhibition play. It's on the station. We're going to have it at 5:55. That's when the broadcast begins. Last exhibition game before the home opener on Thursday. We'll be broadcasting live. The Chris and Amy show is happening at 9 o'clock, but the entire day we'll have broadcast live from Cardinals Nation leading into the pregame show on Thursday. And also for this show, moving forward, starting a week from tomorrow, we will have our weekly visit with manager Oliver Marmol. He will join the show every Tuesday at 12 o'clock, just like you did last season. Those conversations with Bernie, Tom, Ollie, and me are always a lot of fun, and we hope you tune in for that. The Gashouse Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, and Chesterfield Fence and Deck. MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, who is going to be joining the show every week, at this time, 12:15, I believe. I think it's going to be this time every week. If not, it'll be every week at some point. We'll let you know. But Amsinger joins us when we come back on KMOX. Baseball season starts this week. Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang today, and it is time to go to the guest line for the first time this season. We are going to be talking with this man, Greg Amsinger from MLB Network, who'll be joining the show weekly thanks to Lindenwood University, one of the fine universities here in the St. Louis area, and we've got Amsinger with us now. How's it going, Greg?
I am doing well, gentlemen. Good to hear your voices, and I'm excited to be with you guys every week on KMOX. Obviously, my career started at KMOX as a producer, and I'm proud to say that. I tell a lot of people that, producing Cardinal baseball. Big deal, set the foundation for my broadcasting career, so it's going to be fun to rap about baseball in St. Louis on a weekly basis.
And you know what? You wouldn't have had the opportunity to work at KMOX if it wasn't for the Lindenwood Lions, you know?
Listen,
you never could have been here.
I am a product of the Lindenwood University. I am proud of my school. I'm excited about all the things that they're doing to grow it to even bigger and better things. I'm very connected to the university. I'll be coming back this weekend, actually, for the Black and Gold dinner to help raise money for the athletics department. So I'm all things Lindenwood Lions for sure.
Greg, when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals this year, what's kind of the national spin on how folks are viewing them from where you sit? Obviously, lower expectations, but still some intrigue. Oliver Marmol saying that he expects a certain style of play still to be shown this year.
Listen, I think the national word is confusion. I like the word intrigue, but I don't think anyone knows what to think about the St. Louis Cardinals. They immediately go to rebuild, which I think is lazy analysis. I don't believe it's a rebuild. I think this is a new philosophy of competition. There was a very long lineage of winning baseball in St. Louis that implemented free agent signings, marquee future Hall of Famers. You could go back to 1913. There's always been at least one Hall of Famer connected to St. Louis Cardinal baseball in every season. I think there was a lull where Tony La Russa would fill that gap as a manager. Other than that, fans in St. Louis are used to being able to buy the jersey of a future Hall of Famer. This is a completely different reality. Do I think this means they're going to lose 95 games? No, I don't believe that. I am a big believer in pitching and bullpenning. And do you have athleticism, or are you going to wait for a homer? If you're going to wait for a homer, if that's the philosophy, you better have Aaron Judge on your team. You better have a lineup that looks like the Seattle Mariners. You better have loaded stars that can belt the ball over the wall. Cardinals don't have that, but they have athleticism. They have guys that can run the bases, guys that can shoot the gap, score from first base. I like the team. And I get a lot of eye rolling from my colleagues at MLB Network when I say that. All the starting rotation is filled with is upside guys. And then you go to the bullpen. I think that's the strength of the team. So based on what I just said, I look for in a good baseball team, the Cardinals have two. I don't think the rotation's solidified. I'm not saying that. But all five guys have upside, and that is exciting. So nationally, people are writing the Cardinals off in a division, which is silly to do when you consider the Milwaukee Brewers have done nothing but win when the media writes them off. It's a winnable division still in my eyes. So I think the Cardinals are going to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that and how nationally the Cardinals are viewed with the major league roster. But they have been getting a great deal of credit for what they've done at the lower levels. And I know you don't like using the word rebuild, but that's basically what they've done at those levels. The infrastructure they have invested in, the amount of trades they've made with, bringing in some of this good young talent. In that regard, they are getting a lot of national praise, are they not?
Well, Chaim Bloom had one of the most chaotic off seasons I've ever seen from a president of baseball operations. He acquired 13 players, 13 prospects into his farm system in one off season, trading contracts that are not easy to move. The fact that he got a player for Nolan Arenado is incredible. And I think Nolan Arenado is going to play well for the Arizona Diamondbacks. But that was a hard contract to move. he fleeced the Boston Red Sox, his old organization, numerous trades and a ton of prospects. That might come back to look poorly upon the Boston Red Sox. Maybe not. Only time will tell. But it was a commendable performance from Chaim Bloom. And he clearly left the vision wide open for Cardinal fans. What do you think is happening here in St. Louis? Oh, no, we're not spending big money on players who are going to be disgruntled because they don't fit the vibe of the young guys who are trying to manufacture runs in the third inning. This is now every player pulling on the same side of the rope. It's an exciting time. It reminds me of early 90s Cardinal baseball when they had this young outfield of Bernard Gilkey and Ray Lankford and Brian Jordan. The infield was a bunch of young guys surrounding Ozzie Smith until Royce Clayton arrived. But I was excited about the young players back then. This is the same thing. And the farm system, which is a top five farm system now in baseball, that's a big deal. Organizational depth only leads to success. So I'm with you. I think Chaim Bloom had a terrific winter, and we'll see if the fruits of his labor lead to some W's.
Greg, we often talk about a clubhouse having veteran leadership and how important that is. But for a team like this Cardinals club, could you see the benefit of having all of those young guys sort of have the ability to look around and say, hey, it's just us, and maybe take ownership of what they could make this season become?
Yeah, look, it's a fair fight. What do I mean by that? Nolan Gorman knew no matter what he did, Nolan Arenado's playing third base, right? I mean, Nolan Arenado, that's why they spent money there. You know, Alec Burleson was trying to figure out the outfield, and he's platooning with other guys because the outfield is crammed. Because you got Paul Goldschmidt playing first base. Paul Goldschmidt's playing first base. Paul Goldschmidt can be hit 220. The amount of money the Cardinals are paying him, he's playing first base. So now it's a fair fight. If you're going to lose your job at any position, it's because a younger guy outplayed you, not because there's a contract that the team has to honor over you. And to me, that leads to true athletic competition. So you're going to see the best of all of these young guys who know there are no politics involved. There's no contract holding them back. If they're not in the starting lineup, it's because they're not good enough. And that truth, that real awakening, I think is going to lead to exciting things for the organization.
Talking with Greg Amsinger, who's going to join us weekly, MLB Network's Greg Amsinger. And looking at what Oliver Marmol did, and I just mentioned that he's going to be with us every week on Tuesdays like he did last season. I think, personally, he did about as well as you could do with the mixture he had, with the roster he had last year. And if you look at some of the metrics, he probably overperformed what the win total should have been last season. How do you see him and the job he's done in St. Louis?
Oliver Marmol is a good manager, and he's the perfect guy for this roster right now. Was that a daunting task to jump in as manager in your 30s and you're managing future Hall of Famers up and down the lineup, the end of Albert Pujols' career, Adam Wainwright's career? Yes, that is a brutal role for a guy that's in his mid-30s, okay? But what his foundation and history and resume says is that this is the type of managing that he leans into. Player development. The young, modern player, he walks around. Listen, man, I bounced around in Soulard with Ollie Marmol, okay? He's walking around with his hat backwards. Y'all seen him out, right? He is a cool cat. He's the modern manager. I hang out with him all the time in the winter meetings. He's a good time. He's fresh. He's new thinking. It's not the old stodgy way of demanding the most from your baseball players. He tries to connect with them more like a brother instead of a father, which I think is the modern manager. So I think he understands data is important. He's a great communicator to the front office. That's why Chaim Bloom had every right to move on from Ollie Marmol. If you take over as president of baseball operations, it is a rarity that you take in the incumbent unless he won a World Series or he won a pennant. So clearly Ollie Marmol is a communicator that president of baseball operations does admire and appreciates. He has a lot of skills that fit the time right now. And I think Cardinal fans need to recognize that the players love him. And if you're looking at a bunch of young players that you all want to have this groundswell of confidence that somehow break through in 2026, Ollie Marmol is the perfect guy to do that.
Do you feel that, because Chaim Bloom, as you said, could have made a different decision, but do you feel that now with Oliver Marmol, and maybe it's not a rebuild, but it's certainly building towards something, that Oliver Marmol is a manager really well positioned to take on that kind of shepherd role to a young team. Like before, they were trying to hold on the last vestiges of the Mosellock era. But now with Chaim Bloom in there, it almost feels like it could be a fresh start for Oliver Marmol as well to really hit the ground running with both feet in on the type of team they want to be with a roster that now reflects it.
100%. I mean, this guy dealt with a lot. Managing and balancing egos is one of the first things you have to do as a manager. He did that at a very young age. Managing future Hall of Famers that are older than you, that's a very difficult thing to do. Ollie Marmol, he dealt with it with humility. Listen to Albert Pujols talk about Ollie Marmol. That second half of his final season wouldn't have happened without Ollie Marmol. He was going to hang it up. Ollie Marmol sat him down. He sat down Albert and argued with Albert about why he needs to keep playing in his mid-30s to a 40-year-old Albert Pujols. This guy has the chops to sit in a room and connect with people. And look, the bullpen, which everyone's raving about for the St. Louis Cardinals, they added some pieces, which I love. The Stanek, the Brules, the Soriano has really been impressive. But the other guys, Leahy's out in the rotation. Why? Well, because he had a defined role that Ollie Marmol nurtured him in and gave him incredible confidence. He'll talk about that. And now here he has blossomed into the starting rotation. Ollie wouldn't leave the starters out there. He would go pull McGreevy the second he thought there was trouble. And now you got a very confident number two starter. Matthew Liberatore, ask Matthew Liberatore about Ollie Marmol. His evolution has a lot to do with the way he's communicated with Ollie Marmol. The bullpen, Swanson, has emerged as this, I think, an all-star this year. I think he'll be an all-star. And it's all because Ollie Marmol communicated with these guys every day. Man, the spoken word is still AI is not going to replace everything, folks. And Ollie Marmol has all the intangibles that AI cannot replicate. So I know people think that managers just get handed them the lineup and that he's just a yes man. If you think that, you're not talking to any of the players who are in the trenches with this guy every day.
You can watch the Gas House Gang on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube. And a comment from YouTube from Ralph, who says, God, Greg has great hair. And I'm going to tell you something. He does have great hair. He always looks great, too, with a million-dollar suit. Today, this is the first time I've ever seen you in anything other than an $8,000 suit. But the Lindenwood shirt, it looks pretty good, too.
Well, listen, I got a lot of Lindenwood swag, and if I'm on in St. Louis, you're going to see swag from Lindenwood. That's just how it's going to be if I'm on before I'm on TV. Now, if I'm on TV, yeah, the suit, the tie, pocket square, I've got all that lined up. But yeah, if I'm just hanging out at my house, there it's Lindenwood swag for days.
I just figured you were laying around in suits. That's kind of
everyone thinks that. Yeah. Maybe it's because my hair always looks good.
I think that's because of that. Amsinger, it's good to talk to you, man. Looking forward to our weekly conversations.
All right, me too. It's going to be a lot of fun. See you guys.
That is Greg Amsinger, MLB Network. We'll be joining the Gas House Gang every week. And when we come back, a guy who's been joining us every week through the Billikens basketball season, he's the play-by-play guys, Bob Ramsey, will join the show on a day in which Josh Schertz officially signs his contract extension with the Billikens to remain the coach at SLU. Rammer is next on the Gas House Gang.
95, 72, number 3 Michigan over the Billikens to end the Bills season 29-6.
What a great season. One of the best seasons the Billikens have had here in 25-26. And it did come to an end on Saturday after a big win on Thursday night in the first round of the NCAA tournament over Georgia. They lose it to Michigan on Saturday, who, again, may be the best team in the country. And for the last time this season, we bring in our guy, Bob Ramsey, the play-by-play voice you just heard. And he visited with us thanks to Royal Banks of Missouri throughout the season. Rammer, what a fun year. Hate to see it come to an end, but it was a really tough draw for the Billikens to have that game on Saturday.
You know, that's why the 8-9 seed is tough on anybody, and certainly for the Billikens. And you just pick up, you turn one or two more losses into the season into wins, or you get to the conference championship game and maybe even win it. It changes those matchups. It changes the seeding. But one of the things that's great about college basketball is, you know, even going back to November, every game counts. You didn't win that game against Stanford. Had you won that game, your strength of schedule, your quad stuff, everything's just a little bit better. And so that's why college basketball is great. Everything you do contributes to the way it ends up.
Raymer, do you still feel, though, that there is a little bit of a slight to the mid-majors like St. Louis, where, talked about it with Ranji, you just almost have to be perfect to avoid having a second-round matchup like a Michigan or like Utah State versus Arizona that we saw last night?
Well, the Power Five are trying to eliminate mid-majors. That's anybody who still wants to debate that either is just taking a position or they're on the take for covering the Big Five or they don't pay attention. That's not really, I think, the important part. But if you're talking specifically about the seeding in the tournament, the Bills were 4-4. They played 500 ball in the last month. That really can't be disputed or debated. So they kind of made their own bed, you know, going in. So, you know, I think the way the seedings went was probably about right. I have no problem with that. But then if you're going to criticize mid-majors or in particular St. Louis for having a bad schedule, but nobody will schedule you, that's not a fair criticism.
Yeah, and Matt Painter with Purdue was talking about that here in St. Louis after the fact and, you know, said these high majors have to protect their programs and they're not obligated to play any of the mid-major schools. But it does Correct. Seem like something needs to be done, though, because you can't and I've been fighting this fight for a long time. I'm an Illinois State guy. So for 30 years, I'm a Missouri Valley fan and just watching them struggle to get some of these games scheduled and then get penalized for it where they say, well, you didn't play anybody. Well, yeah, we tried, but we can't. And so something needs to be done.
Well, the problem is, yeah, something needs to be done, but short of the president naming a college sports czar, it's not going to get done. Because who's in charge? The Power Five schools are.
Raymer, obviously a lot of conversation surrounding Josh Schertz and his status and other schools maybe trying to pick him off at this point after their great season. What's your excitement about him now signing that new extension and being able to continue the momentum that was built this season?
Well, yeah, you can't put into words how huge it is for the program. A coach who apparently, according to reports, was still being pursued hard by some Power Five schools, even though he had agreed to terms with the university. And so by signing the deal, it puts all that to rest. And it just kind of shows the kind of person he is, the quality guy he is, that he's committed. We all know the great story about his relationship with Robbie Avila. And so that kind of relationship commitment from Coach Schertz, whether it's with a player, whether it's with a university, you know, I think it shows how special he is and how important it is for the Billiken program to remain competitive at the highest level that they're allowed to. So, yeah, it's when they announced that before the first game last Thursday, that before the game against Georgia, it was a huge, huge deal, no doubt.
Yeah, it's not just the continuity, Bob Ramsey. It is the fact that he is a very good coach, and the Billikens are fortunate to have him here, but he is going to move forward now without Robbie Avila, who was such a fun player to watch, and they have a special relationship, very special. So what happens now with this program moving forward without Avila?
Well, I know that assistant coaches are already on the road today. So it's all about recruiting and retention. So you say, well, what's next? Recruiting and retention. And that's the way they go, and that's the way it is, and that's not specific to SLU. That is every team in America, men and women. How do you retain the players you have, and how do you add to the mix? whether it's in the portal or high school recruiting. The only player you have coming in, you know for sure, is the point guard out of New York City. He'll be a freshman. We all know it takes time. You know what's interesting about having a point guard locked in, and this is not to cast aspersions about anybody on the roster, and we even talked about it on KMOX during games, that it was clear that when Robbie Avila was out of the lineup, the offense didn't run as well, that everything ran through him. And he had competent players on the perimeter, but nobody was a true point guard. So for this past season, how could you get a great point guard to only play 10 or 15 minutes a game? So that was a little bit of the conundrum for the team this year. So now moving forward, you might see a more traditional point guard, wings, and bigs moving forward. That's a wild guess on my part.
All right, Bob Ramsey, it was a fun season for us. I know it was for you. So as we say goodbye here, just, and I know there have been a lot of good Billiken seasons that you could point to, but as you are able to now look back on it, how much fun was this one compared to those?
Probably the most fun, because you saw it early how dynamic the team was, and you had that great player that could lead the way. Thought a lot about it because I've been getting the question since last summer, actually, is this the best team ever? And I can only talk about the modern era, say 1982 forward. You know, 1982 was Rich Grauer was hired and sort of resurrected the program. So I got three teams that I think contend, 2013, probably that 94 team, and this year are probably the three. And then it just kind of depends on what you value and, you know, what the earmarks are for you to determine greatness. And so, without question, it's one of the top three teams I've seen in my 40 years here.
Rammer, enjoyed the season, enjoyed having our conversations with you every week. Thank you for being with us again.
Guys, it was really, really fun hanging out with you guys every Monday at lunchtime. And let's hope things keep rolling forward. We'll get after it again next November.
You got it. Thanks, Rammer.
See you guys.
Bob Ramsey, play-by-play voice of the Billikens. He and Earl Austin Jr. on the call here on KMOX. There's baseball today on KMOX. Last exhibition game before the season starts. Cardinals are in Springfield, 5:55 for the pregame today. And then the opener is on Thursday. My partner for my show during the day, the Chris and Amy show, which is on from 9 to noon, we're going to be broadcasting live from Cardinals Nation. And she, Amy Marks-Kors, is going to join us next to talk Blues. Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. And Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Just a few more moments to go on the Gas House Gang. And we're glad you're with us every weekday from noon until 1. Don't forget, Oliver Marmol will join us every Tuesday again at noon. That's the schedule that starts next Tuesday, so a week from tomorrow. Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ranji today. We're going to talk some Blues hockey now with Amy Marks-Kors, who is with us. So there's been so much going on in sports. We spent all day talking about Billikens, NCAA tournaments. The Cardinals have opening week, and the Blues are still playing. Did you know that?
The Blues are.
There you are.
They are still playing. It does kind of feel like that because they were also on a 500-day road trip is what it felt like.
And then the Olympics?
Well, they had the Olympics, right, and they come back. And this road trip that they've had, it's got to be the most inefficient road trip ever because they had three games and each game was separated by 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they were gone for 8 days. For only three games. And yes, they did beat Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks, who are way at the bottom of the National Hockey League right now. And so the Blues won. So they've been pretty hot for the month of March, as they tend to do. But I think right now you watch it, like you're watching the young guys develop. I get it. It's not training camp, but it almost kind of has that vibe to it. Which young guys are establishing themselves as the season comes to a close? Because, no, I guess they're not mathematically out of it, but for all practical purposes, the Blues will not be in the playoffs.
But you certainly, and I know a couple of weeks ago you kind of joked and said, oh, they're winning games, it may hurt their draft position, but mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious how you feel now about some of these wins where it's like, yeah, they're on the periphery, but is it more about, hey, if the young guys are winning games now, that could really be a good sign for the future that you certainly take?
Yeah, I kind of look at it towards the future because we know what this team has been all season, and I don't think that there was this magic moment where suddenly everything was clicking. Yes, certain players look better now. Robert Thomas looks better post-surgery, post-Olympic break. Joel Hofer, who was kind of a slow build all season, has looked really good post-Olympic break. Even Jimmy Snuggerud has been good after that wrist surgery. But, I mean, you've had a revolving door of a lineup with injuries, with certain players, you know, sitting out, with young guys coming up. The Blues have had so many faces. I think what I look at is you want to see the young talent hungry, pushing, fighting for that spot, not just this season, but next season as well. You want to see the veterans kind of take that leadership with effort and habits as the young guys are learning the game. I think what's interesting is that I always take plus minus with a grain of salt. And unless you have an anomaly in the plus minus, you don't really pay that much attention to it. But Robert Thomas has been plus 16 in the month of March, which is telling that things are going well for him and his line. That's second best in the National Hockey League, second only to Rasmus Dahlin. But what also you notice is that it's his line mates who are up there with him at the top of the league. So of the top seven plus minus, four of them are Blues, and three of them are the Thomas-Holloway-Snuggerud line, with Cam Fowler coming in at number seven. So you see that line's working, and I think that speaks to kind of what I just said. Post-operation, post-procedure, Robert Thomas and Jimmy Snuggerud have looked really good.
So last thing for you, Amy. The Blues here have 13 games left to go. They are 8 games out of a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, 8 points out of a playoff spot. And, you know, with these 13, what do we need to see, really? To make a playoff run here, not likely, it could happen. You know,
you kind of have to win out.
Yeah, it could happen. Yeah. But, you know, the cup season was improbable. I don't think this is that. I'm just mm-hmm. saying that it is still mathematically possible. But let's really think forward. What is this last 13 games really about?
I think it's about the youth, the effort, and the habits. I think we want to see Joel Hofer continue being as strong as he is, because he is the best goaltender in the month of March right now with his save percentage. He looks really good, and knowing that the regular season is going to expand by 2 games next year, you are going to split that workload between goaltenders. I do think the Blues don't have Colton Ellis anymore, so I do think you need Jordan Binnington next year, but you'll see Hofer as well carrying a big load. And I think with the young guys, it's those habits. It's that work ethic. It's seeing what does your future look like. And in that sense, even if the Blues aren't in the playoffs, I do think it's fun to watch their games.
Yeah, hockey is hockey, man, and hockey is always a good time. So just would like to have seen them really build off what happened at the end of last year.
Well, you know, everybody, basically everyone except for Justin Falk, had a down year by a lot.
That's
I don't
wild.
Think they'll have a 20-goal score.
All right, so you and me Wednesday for our show, we'll be at Rally House, mm-hmm. 9 to 1, getting ready for the opener. And then we have opening day stuff on Thursday. And we'll be at Cardinals Nation.
Yeah, and that Rally House is the Eager Road.
Eager Road by the Chick-fil-A.
Yep, at Brentwood Point.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that's Amy Marks' chorus. Brendan Schaefer is with me, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Brendan, before we say goodbye here, Amy and I also have our Barch Madness tournament because we are finding the best bar in St. Louis.
Okay.
What is the best bar in St. Louis?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have a best?
The best, number one. There was some debate on Twitter the last couple of days. I really like that place, Nick's Pub.
Nick's Pub is still in.
It's still in?
It's still in the tournament.
There was some conversation about Nick's Pub on Twitter, and I said, look, man, I love the food, love the atmosphere in there. So that would be That would be my go-to to continue advancing in the tournament, I think.
Well, here's the thing, man. They've got a really tough draw. They are the 9 seed, and now they're facing McGurk's.
Okay. Wow.
So,
it's, give them hell, but...
Go vote. Yeah. Well, you can vote on Twitter. Anyway, Brendan Schaefer, it was good to talk with you today. Thanks for being with me again.
Thank you.
We'll do it again soon. Brendan Schaefer with us on the Gas House Gang. I'm Chris Ranji. If you missed this show or anything in it, you want to go back and hear our conversation with Greg Amsinger or Bob Ramsey or Amy Markscores, you can do that. KMOX.com or the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow. Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman returns, and me on the Gas House Gang. That is tomorrow at 12 on KMOX. Dave Glover is next.